is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are available at Nation Radio at theteam1260.com. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. And don't forget, you have one more week to enter your top 10 in our Nation Radio contest. Email your top 10 to Nation Radio at theteam1260.com. And the winners are going to get a an Edmonton Oiler jersey with the name of the first overall pick on it. So that's going to be outstanding. We're looking forward to that. It'll be a great weekend. We're counting down, but we're also looking back to what was a great week for Boston Bruin fans. Hey, Kirk Ludeke, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm pretty good, Alan. How are you? Thanks for having me on again.
Well, you know what? I had to for a couple of reasons. First of all, as a Bruin fan back to the Orr era, and there's a lot of us in Western Canada, this was an interesting week because you're torn because the Canucks are obviously a Canadian team, but I think loyalties go back farther when you're a kid growing up in the Orr era. This was a long time coming for Bruins fans. I know that the parade was, I think, the biggest parade they've had in history in Boston today. How was it?
That's correct. Yeah. Well, I wasn't there, but I saw the images, and yeah, it was unbelievable. A million plus, and just throngs of people. And what's great is the time of the year. I mean, in past parades, you're talking the Patriots or the Red Sox. The weather was a little colder, and I think Boston has had 7 of these in the last 10 years.
Wow.
So they've gotten better at putting them together each time.
Is Boston a football, baseball, hockey, basketball? Or is it everything? It's just sports crazy, mad town.
Yeah, it's a sports crazy town. But I think, you know, certainly when I was a kid growing up, it was a Bruins town. And you can say it's a hockey town. Yes, not comparable to the hockey towns you have in Canada. But people are passionate. But they're very passionate about the Bruins. And I think, you know, it was unfortunate that the team was not as competitive as it could have been, you know, especially in the late 90s and the early 2000s. It kind of led to a malaise. But certainly in recent seasons, even given the way things gone, I remember going to development camp last July, and the Bruins were coming off that crushing defeat to Philadelphia, and they were still packing the building there, the practice facility in Wilmington. And so people were excited, and I don't think they could have scripted the rebound this season any better.
It's funny, and I mean, no disrespect to the Bruins asking this question, but they were a great team last year, but they had really key injuries. Krejci, it seemed like it was insurmountable, the amount of injuries that they had. This year, they did have some injuries, but it was a matter of being able to overcome those. How much do you think injury and luck is a factor in such a long spring to win the Stanley Cup?
I think it's a huge, and the funny thing is you can never account for it, because it's not a quantitative thing. It's not something you can plug numbers into or do a hard black and white analysis on. I mean, you know, it's an X factor, and I think that last year, obviously losing Krejci and Sturm and Adam McQuaid, who I think is one of the more underrated, unheralded guys and heroes of this Stanley Cup championship team. And they lost them all against Philadelphia. And you're talking about, you know, last year the Bruins were dead last in the regular season in goal scoring. So when you take, you know, Sturm and Krejci out of the mix, and you know now that Savard was nowhere near 100% from the concussion, and we don't know if he's going to play again still. And you put all those factors in there, and yeah, it was just too much for the Bruins to overcome. But to management's credit, they added Nathan Horton and Gregory Campbell pieces over the summer, and then they go out and they got Caberle, who I think is underappreciated as well. Certainly didn't put up the numbers people expected, but I think his contribution showed in other ways, and I wrote a column about it on New England Hockey Journal website. And then, of course, Chris Kelly and Rich Peverly were just tremendous as those depth guys you have to win with. So, you know, full marks to Boston management and Coach Julien for staying the course and getting it done.
Caberle's an interesting player in that he does everything so smoothly, you often don't notice him unless he's making an error. And he had the same problem in Toronto, because he's been an outstanding player for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. I was not a huge, I mean, if you read my blog, I did an analysis, because, I mean, the writing was on the wall that the Bruins were interested in. I mean, you go back to the 2009 draft, you had the aborted trade. I mean, he, you know, Cabrelle really would have been a Bruin, you know, 2 years ago, if not for that, shall we say, lack of communication between Brian Burke and Peter Chiarelli over a first-round draft pick. But at the end of the day, I was not a, I recognized he was going to help the Bruins, but you wouldn't necessarily call me an advocate. But, you know, when I broke down the game film from games 5, 6, and 7 here over the last couple of days, I really came to appreciate what he did for the Bruins more and more. And I think one of the things that Cabrelle does that people don't get, because it doesn't show up on the stats, and his stats were really mediocre in the Stanley Cup final. Let's be honest. I mean, the stats don't tell the story. But what he does is he passes the puck so well and he skates so well that he forced the Vancouver Canucks forecheck to respect Yep. the Boston back end. And what that does is instead of the Canucks just being able to tee off at will on every single defense pairing, they had to account for his every time he was on the ice, and he wasn't on the ice much. But that just kind of translates into the overall game plan. They had to account for that. And I think as a result, they gave the Bruins a little more space than they would have if they didn't have a Cabrelle, and they didn't believe that any player on the Boston defense could have moved that puck and burned them with a long stretch play. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that I think Cabrelle really, you know, really provided for the Bruins here and down the stretch and in the playoffs. And if you let that guy go and you don't have it next season, then it's one of those, oh, gee, Neil, you realize after the fact what he brought and you come to appreciate him more.
Let's change gears a little bit and talk about the draft, which is coming up next Friday and Saturday. Are you hearing anything, any changes, anything going on, any trade rumors? Players moving up or down, or is it pretty much set until you get to the draft now?
You know, you're hearing rumors, but I don't know that I put a lot of stock in them. One of the real challenges anytime you talk about moving draft picks, as you know, is getting commensurate value, and teams that generally finish low in the standings really need those draft picks. You know, in the salary cap era, cost certainty, as Commissioner Bettman calls it, you know, these teams have to have these high-end talents that come in on lower entry-level contract deals to offset the veteran costs so that they can field a competitive team. So, you know, if you're going to trade out of that mix, you need to make sure you're getting very good value in return. And a lot of times, I mean, a team might make you a good offer if you're like New Jersey, for example, and you're picking fourth, but that team making the offer might be picking 10th, 11th, 12th. So you have to really, if you're Lou Lamoriello, you have to weigh, you know, hey, you know, do we give up our spot at the table to get one of the premier talents in this draft to move way out? And that was, I know that was a problem with the Bruins in 2006. They had a ton of offers for Phil Kessel, or for that fifth pick, which probably would have been Phil Kessel, you know, in Vancouver. But at the end of the day, the Bruins couldn't justify moving out of the top 10 because the teams that were making the offers were just too far down the, right, the draft board, and the Bruins just couldn't give up a talent like Kessel. So that, I think there could be some movement, but it will be smaller. I don't think you'll see seismic jumps and things like that. It'll be teams that are close in the pecking order that might make some moves, but I can't imagine there'll be any earth-shattering things, but stranger things have happened.
The last few years, it seems as though, to me anyway, the currency has been doubled-up picks, like a 19 and a 31 for the Oilers to move up, or last year they traded an unsigned player in Riley Nash, but he hadn't signed a contract yet, so there was a little bit of freedom for the team, Carolina, that had picked him up to you know, sign him in their own way. Do you think there'll be a little bit of change? Do you think we'll see more marquee names dealt this year, or more of the same draft packaging picks and that sort of thing?
I just think because of the salary cap, it makes it so much more difficult to move marquee names. And that's really the currency, the draft picks and the futures, the projectables. Those are the guys that are really the coin of the realm these days when it comes to draft day trades.
Now, when do you go to the draft? Do you go Wednesday or Thursday?
I'm going to go Thursday morning.
Okay. And when you arrive there, then that's when you hit the ground, and there's already rumors, and there's already a few items that might have legs as far as rumors are concerned.
Right, yeah. Most teams will do media availability with the general managers and in the hotel where the teams are staying. I know last year the Bruins did one on Thursday, and they also did another one the day of the draft on Friday. So it just varies from team to team, but that's where you start picking up things. That's where you start picking up things. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the schedule yet. The Bruins have had their hands full here over the last couple of days with other priorities. So, when I get there, I'll just kind of put my ear to the ground the great thing about the draft, Alan, is you run into all of these scouts that you've either seen in rinks or you talk to via phone or email all year. You see them walking around and you're able to, you know, grab them real quick. Hey, you know, what's going on? And, you know, are you hearing anything? And that's the beautiful thing about it, because all the teams come together with their staffs to, you know, for the draft. And for fans, if they can recognize these guys, it's a pretty neat experience to kind of stop them on the street and engage them a little bit.
One thing that I found interesting last year as an Oilers fan, I mean, I was obviously, you know, surfing the net and paying attention as closely as I could, listening to Team 1260, getting the draft flavor during the day. But the only time I found out that Tamalini had been apparently stalking Chiarelli for the number 2 overall pick was when the TSN draft coverage occurred. And I guess that kind of thing just happens on the floor, right?
Yeah, a lot of times, I mean, I think it's thought through and there's a strategy that's put into place. A lot of times teams don't want the word to leak out too soon. So they'll wait and see what they can get done. And because, as you know, it's very hard to keep a lid on rumors these days, and especially with social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook and all that. So I think it's a purposeful process to where GMs have in their mind that they're going to make a run at trying to acquire a pick like that or try to acquire a player, but they wait until we get closer on so that they can control how that information is disseminated to the public.
Kurt, where can we read you and hear you on draft weekend?
Well, the Bruins Draft Watch blog will be in full effect. I'm actually being sent there by my publication, New England Hockey Journal and New York Hockey Journal. So we're talking hockeyjournal.com or nyhockeyjournal.com. And I don't know what kind of appearances I'll be having. I believe I'm going to be on a Calgary show at some point, and there's some other things. So if draft fans are really, you know, connected, we'll be sure to post the stuff on Twitter, and at my Twitter's at K Ludeke, Ludeke 29. And we'll try to keep the information going out there.
And if something breaks between Boston and Edmonton, we reserve the right to call you again next weekend, buddy.
Hey, man, you know, anytime, the more the merrier. I don't think I can rack up enough appearances on Nation Radio. I really enjoy coming on, and I thank you for having me on as much as you do. I just hope your listeners aren't about to revolt there every time they tune in and hear me on the airwaves.
Believe me, we're getting good feedback. Don't worry about that. Thanks, Kirk, very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
All right, Kirk Ludeke from Bruins Draft Watch, who, by the way, if you don't know, he goes back to John Short. John Short used to have him on all the time, and at that time he was, I believe, writing for the New England Hockey Journal. But John, such a class act and a great broadcaster. And one of the first things that I did when we started talking about Nation Radio was have John on. And then, you know, Kirk Ludeke is a guy that I listen to a lot, and I appreciate what he does online. And so it was a good fit because he knows his stuff and he's willing to share it, and we appreciate him very much. 12:58 coming up in the next half hour, we're going to talk to Jason Greger, Matt Bug from Dauber Hockey. And up next from Oil Kings broadcast, Kent Simpson.